You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
Revelation chapter 13. We're going to continue to look at the subject of the Antichrist, whom the book of Revelation calls the beast. He doesn't call him the Antichrist, but that's who he's describing here. Revelation chapter 13, verse 11. So we're going to look at part 2, where we encounter the second beast called the false prophet. So, then I saw a second beast coming out of the earth. It had two horns like a lamb, but it spoke like a dragon. Later in chapter 16, we read that this is called the false prophet. So we got the dragon, that's Satan. We've got the beast, that's the Antichrist, 1 John 2:18. Here we have the false prophet. He's kind of the supporter of the beast and his initiatives. He's like a lamb. That remind you of anybody? Jesus. He's mimicking Jesus, so he looks like a little cuddly lamb, but he's got this voice like a dragon. So immediately we're cued in with this apocalyptic literature that, oh, this is not right. Something is definitely wrong with this lamb. It exercised all the authority of the first beast, the Antichrist, on its behalf. It made the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast whose fatal wound had been healed. He's kind of likened to a minister of propaganda. Think of Hitler in World War II. He had his Joseph Goebbels, who was there basically to get people to get into what Hitler was doing into the Third Reich. This false prophet, he's called a second beast. So he's got power. He's demonically possessed by Satan. And yet he's there to basically get people into the beast, this false Christ. And it, the second beast, false prophet, performed great signs, even causing fire to come down from heaven to the earth in full view of the people. That reminds us of Revelation 11. Remember, we had the two prophets there. They could call down fire from heaven, and he's able to mimic these same things. Reminds us of Pharaoh's magicians in Exodus 4 and 5, where they could mimic up to a degree what Moses could do. Same thing. Verse 14, because of the signs, it was given power to perform on behalf of the first beast, the Antichrist, and it deceived the inhabitants of the earth. It ordered them to set up an image in honor of the beast, the Antichrist, who was wounded by the sword and yet lived. The second beast, the false prophet, was given power to give breath to the image of the first beast, so that the image could speak and cause all who refused to worship the image to be killed. What is this? It's like an idol. It's a different word used than for an idol. It's an image. A material, physical image that this false prophet sets up, but it can speak. This is getting ratcheted up. When you look at the Old Testament, the biggest polemic against idolatry is that these idols, they can't do anything. Read Isaiah 44. You get a piece of wood, and you cut it in half, and you make an idol out of one half of the wood. And then you take the other half, and you use it as your kindling to cook your dinner. Can't you see idolatry is just a feat? It's powerless. Here, this image has some cojones to it. It can speak, and it gets people to worship the beast, seeing this speaking image. What is this? I don't know. But if you worship this idol, that is betrayal of God. And if you don't worship the idol, that's betrayal of the beast. Verse 16, it also forced all people. How many people? All people. Great and small. Rich and poor. Free and slave. So this is describing everyone on earth. Everyone needs to do what? Receive a mark on where? Their right hand or on their forehead. So everyone needs to get this mark, whatever that is. Why? So that they can buy and sell. If you don't get this mark on your hand or on your forehead, that's what it says, you're not able to buy and sell. Now, to be clear, this isn't saying that you're not allowed, as the NET translation renders it. Like you can still buy and sell, it's just illegal. No, you're not able. Dunamai is the word. Think of the word dynamite. We get that word from the root word dunamis, dunamai in Greek. You don't have the power. You're not able to buy or sell anything unless you get this mark, which is the name of the beast or the number of its name. Now, to be sure, this has never happened, ever, in human history. George Ladd, Grant Osborne, scholars, they note this. There was never a point in the Roman Empire or anywhere else up until the present moment where you needed to have a mark, like a tattoo or a brand on your hand or your forehead, otherwise you weren't able to buy or sell. How would that, just use a little bit of common sense, how would that even work in the ancient Roman Empire? You're not allowed to barter, you're not allowed to trade, you're not allowed to use Roman coinage. That's ridiculous. You read the scholars on this, they say, well, Christians weren't allowed into the unions, the trade guilds. So if you didn't worship the emperor, you didn't worship the local deities, then you weren't allowed to make a living. That's really cute. That's not what this says here. This says that you're not allowed to buy or sell, not have a job. Others say, well, it's symbolism. Obviously, it's describing that you're going to be persecuted financially if you don't worship the emperor or the local deities. That's not what this says. I mean, you'd have to take this entire thing as symbol. All people. Well, it's really just some people. It's what it's describing in the local Roman Empire. Great and small, rich and poor. That wouldn't apply to Christians. They were very poor. The church in Laodicea was an outlier. And what's the mark? There is no mark. There is no mark in the trade guilds. Nothing like that. What you had to do was you had to worship that particular local deity or Domitian, the emperor, or whomever. There was no mark. All of this has to be interpreted symbolically. Well, he says, this calls for wisdom. Yes, something that modern commentators lack when they read the Bible. This calls for wisdom. Let the person who has insight calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. That number is 666. Remember one time going through a Wendy's. You probably know where this is going. I was getting my food, and the number came out to $6.66, and I gave my money to the woman at the counter, and she looked down at the tag, and she's like, yeah, honey, it's $6.66. Oh, Lord. And I was just like, I'm cool. Everything's all right. You know, 666, yeah. Well, what is the 666? Let's just get this right out of the way up front. Everyone wants to know about this. In verse 18, it said that you need to calculate the number of this beast. What is that referring to? This is an ancient practice referred to as gematria. Gematria is where you used ancient languages and you could number the letters. This was particularly true when it came to ancient Greek, ancient Hebrew, and ancient Aramaic. So in English today, we don't use gematria. A, B, C, D, E, those don't double as numbers. But in Greek, alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon. Alpha, 1, beta, 2, gamma, 3. Get the idea? Letters doubled as numbers. So you could be looking at someone's name, and you could read the name, it'd be a proper noun. But in addition to the name, you could calculate the number of that person's name. My favorite example of this was found in Pompeii. Remember the place that got exploded in AD 79? Covered in ash. That's not the best part of the story, by the way. All right. This is before that. There's this young, star-struck lover. And he says, I love her, whose number is 545. He was in love with 545. Now, guys, Valentine's Day is coming very soon. Let me just throw out there this idea that when you talk to your very special, lovely lady, your sweet sugar honey, may I remind you to use a little bit of gematria and tell her, you know, baby, you are the only one for me, my favorite, lovely, sweet, 545. Anyways, some people take this to be Emperor Nero, gematria. If you take Emperor Nero's name, he was the emperor in AD 54 to 68, and you spell it in Hebrew, did you know that if you take all those letters for Kaiser Neron, Caesar, Nero, King Caesar, right? If you add up all of the letters in his name, which was a convention in the first century, guess what it totals to? 666. So you've got Hank Anagraph, the Bible answer man. He says, modern readers, quote, can be absolutely certain, absolutely, he's got it all figured out, absolutely certain that 666 is the number of Nero's name. Well, this would fit with that view called preterism. In English, the preterite is the past tense. So preterism would be this idea that most of the book of Revelation, probably chapters 1 through 20, are all about the first century AD, destruction of Jerusalem and the temple. So this beast, yeah, you think he's in the future. That's nice. You think there's like going to be an antichrist, takes over the world in the future. Under this view, they're saying, no, look, right here, Nero's name, the emperor at the time who ran the Roman government, his name spelled out to 666. See, I got some problems with the Bible answer man on this point. Number one, why would we translate a Roman emperor's name into Hebrew? You have to translate it into Kaiser Neron, into Hebrew. Why are we doing that? Because it helps it fit. When you translate Nero's name from Greek into Hebrew, there's a missing Hebrew letter, the 10th letter of the Hebrew alphabet, a yod. There's an extra yod. They're missing the yod. And if you add the yod, it's not 666, it's 676. So it doesn't calculate to Nero's name. And here is the coup de grace, in my opinion. None of the early Christians, for the first several hundred centuries, have any commentary on Nero being the Antichrist. No commentary on gematria in Nero's name. This whole interpretation doesn't begin until the 17th century. So, in the beginning, here is a mind that needs wisdom. What's the number? It's the number of a man. His number is 666. And they would have known that at the time. And we can be absolutely certain about this. Oh, give me a break. Then why didn't anybody back then know this? Obviously, they'd look at this as ancient people. They knew gematria. They would have added this up. Stop. All right. Another view is that 666 is just like the unholy Trinity. So you got the Trinity as three persons, one God. This is kind of the unholy Trinity, Satan, Antichrist, and the false prophet. Another view is that this is just humanity in general. What day was humanity created on? The sixth day. What is the number of perfection in the Bible? Seven. So this is not 777, but 666. And it's like one short of perfection. Or another view is that the perfect number would be 777, because 7 days in the week, then God rested, and seven's the perfect number. So 666 is one under 777. But Jesus' name, Yeshua, if you use gematria, it adds up to 888. So Jesus is like 888, and then the perfect number is 777. So he's like one above the perfect number, and then the perfect number, and then humanity is like underneath the perfect number of 666. Following me? No? Me neither. I have no idea what they're talking about. Other people held that these were the Roman Catholic popes. This began with the Reformers. They took this from the idea in the Reformation. And they read Revelation 17, where it says that they were on the seven hills. Rome is called the city of seven hills, so it must be coming out of Rome. Problem is, that word hills in Revelation 17 is oros. It doesn't mean hills. It means mountains. It's not referring to Rome. It's referring to seven mountains, seven empires. That one's wrong. Ronald Wilson Reagan, you know, the president in the 80s. He has six letters in each part of his name. R-O-N-A-L-D, six. Wilson, six. Reagan, six. What more do you need, right? There it is. And when he retired and was done with being a president, he retired to 666 St. Cloud Road. Not kidding. Google it. And Nancy, his wife, was like, Ron, can we change it? They changed it to 668. She's like, I'm just tired of this antichrist business. So they changed the number. How much power do you got there, right there, to change your number of your street to 668? Because you're like, I don't want to be accused of being the antichrist, much like Barack Hussein Obama. Okay, Barack, B-A-R-A-C, that's six letters right there. Hussein, seven letters. Doesn't quite fit. However, Obama, five letters, If you average the letters together, it would be an average of 6 letters per name. His birth date is August 4th. That is the 216th day of the year. Now, stick with me here. 6 times 6 is 36, and 36 times 6 is 216. Coincidence? After Obama won the election, the day after the Illinois state lottery, the numbers were 666. Republicans were going frantic with that. I mean, just going absolute berserk with that idea. Every president has been called the Antichrist. Oh, other people say it's the WWW of the internet. In Hebrew, the letter Vav, W-A-W, that's the way we translate it, is the 6th letter in the Hebrew alphabet, W-W-W, Vav, 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 666. Other people think it's Monster energy drinks. Yeah. You ever look at a Monster energy drink? What's their slogan? Unleash the Jesus? No, unleash. Unleash the beast. Now that's got to be. You're telling me there's no connection there at all? Come on. Let's look a little bit closer at that symbol when we think about the Hebrew letter Vav. These are 3 Vavs, and it's 666. Why is that symbol on the zero there? Or the letter O. That's not a zero. That's an O. That's how you spell. M-O-N-S-D-E-R. That symbol there, you're telling me you don't see a cross there? What is a cross doing on the Monster energy drink? It all makes sense, okay? When you put this all together, it all makes sense to me, okay? All of this is nonsense. All of it. The correct answer to what is the 666 and who is it is, we don't know. We don't know yet. According to 2 Thessalonians 2, the man of lawlessness, this figure, the Antichrist, the beast, whatever you want to call him, he's going to be revealed after the rescue of the church. Remember we talked about that? In the Church of Philadelphia, Jesus said, I'm going to come and I'm going to take you out of the way. Believers in Jesus, they're going to be gone. Then the man of lawlessness appears. So, as Dr. Mark Hitchcock likes to say, if you think you figured out who the Antichrist is, I've got bad news for you. You've been left behind. So all of this literature of people who think that they know the Antichrist, that means that you're basically denying what you believe about the Bible. Totally inconsistent, totally wrong. But the people in the future will know who this is. As I said, we're in part 2. Remember last week we studied that this figure is going to rule over a reunited Roman Empire of specifically 10 nations in Europe. We saw that that's pretty plausible. That, you know, Europe for centuries, they were just biting and clawing at each other. 2 world wars. And then, you know, all of a sudden you've got the Treaty of Rome, 1957. You've got the Maastricht Treaty, 1992. And now everyone in Europe, 27 nations, are holding hands, same currency, all coming together, all in the last 75 years. Hundreds of years of fighting ethnocentrism, and now you've got one European Union. It's definitely moving in that direction, that's for sure. That's plausible. We read last week that the Antichrist is going to create a one-world government. How would that work? Well, with all of the global problems today, it's going to require global solutions. We looked at all these different areas in the world today, and you can't just solve this on a nation-by-nation way. You need an entire overarching sovereignty. Now, this doesn't mean that individual nations lose sovereignty. That's not what the Bible teaches. It says you'll still be a nation. You're just under the global governance of a one-world empire government. Tonight, we're going to look at 2 more areas of the biblical data. This one that we read tonight, he deceives the world into worshiping him through various miracles, quote unquote. Are these real? Are these faked miracles? Like, is he a false prophet in the sense that he's breaking from what God says? Or is he false in the sense that he can't do miracles, so he needs to hype these up in some other way? Well, the text says the false prophet made the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast. He performed these great signs in view of all the people. He deceived the inhabitants of the earth. The image could speak, and it caused all who refused to worship the image to be killed. So, how plausible is that? Like, how plausible is it that you can have a one-world government, you know, violently enforce spiritual beliefs on other people? Like, having the whole government come together and, like, make people believe something violently. Well, this is what we see throughout human history. We see this in Enver Hoxha, the president of Albania. Read about him. This is from the 70s, guys. This is not long ago, 50 years ago. Created the first atheistic state. State-run atheism. If anyone disagreed in Albania, they were persecuted, tortured, killed, run out. And atheistic propaganda was what he promoted. The USSR. Same thing. They had their League of Militant Atheists in the Soviet Union. Now, I don't mean militant atheists like they have a bad attitude or they're mean or something. I mean like militant. They actually killed Christians. Today, I don't know if you followed what's happening in China. Chinese government today, Xi Jinping, is able to use facial detection software to see who and who is not going into all of these state churches. He keeps all the data on this. And the data are all collected so they know who are the ones going into the state churches. That's happening right now. And it isn't just Christians. Look up the Uyghurs. The Uyghur group is a group of Muslims in China. A million of them are missing. Gone. There's pictures of them in re-education camps. There is a zero tolerance policy. That's going on right now. Of course, what I'm not saying is that any of these are the revelation of the Antichrist or the beast or anything like that. What I'm saying is that this idea that a one-world government could come on the scene and violently enforce a certain belief system, totally plausible. In fact, it's happening right now on planet Earth. What about this? Like, that's if you force somebody, but, you know, a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. Like, you can't force people to believe something. Like you said, you know, believe that there's a pink elephant above your head. I mean, I could tell you I believe it. You know, I could lie, but I can't actually believe it. Would it be possible, plausible, to have the one world government, this false prophet, deceive people into believing that this figure is actually the Messiah, God incarnate, according to 2 Thessalonians 2. Is that plausible? Check out this interview. It's from last year.
So, Tom, your company became prominent on the internet with the release of a fake Tom Cruise video, Deep Tom Cruise, that I think attracted like a billion views on TikTok and Instagram.
Looking very sharp, Mr. Cruise.
I think we're really going to wow the world.
And people are really going to believe that we're a couple?
I think most people will believe anything.
Well, I'm going to challenge you and your team to do a bit of a first here. I mean, there's video of you right up on that screen. Show us something surprising you can...
So there we go. This is, a live real-time model of Chris on top of me, running in real time.
And next you'll tell me that it can... Oh, Lord. I'm so uncomfortable with this. Okay, amazing. It obviously occurs to everyone in this room that there are some things that can go horribly wrong with this. And, you know, we've already seen, you know, examples online of, you know, we've had photographs of Trump being arrested that were unreal. There could be video of it. There's pornography that can use the faces of celebrities. All these things that we've seen deepfake. How do you feel about the downside of this technology?
So, personally, you know, we build this stuff and I'm worried, right? Worried is the right instinct for everybody to have. And then, you know, beyond that, think about, you know, what can we do to prepare ourselves? How can we try to impact the future as it spirals in this direction where, as individuals, it's going to be kind of difficult to understand what's computer generated and what's real.
If you were to shut down your company right now, it wouldn't stop the problem of deepfake videos because the technology's out there that's going to happen anyway. That's not within your control.
Yes. All of the GPUs in the universe are driving it, trying to create this. So it doesn't matter what any one person does. This will happen, and it's happening very, very quickly.
So, I mean, we'll talk about the upside in a second, but it seems like we are going to have to get used to a world where we and our children will no longer be able to trust the evidence of our eyes.
I think so.
Yeah, I know dictators have been doing this for a while, deceiving people. Look up Kim Jong-un. He told people in North Korea, defectors came out saying that he was a perfect golfer. He had 11 holes in one the first time he ever golfed. He bowled a perfect 300 the first time he ever bowled. He doesn't urinate or defecate. They believe that. That's not just from the interview, that comedy. That's actually propaganda in North Korea. What happens when you see video where you're not able to tell the difference between reality and fantasy? I think it's very plausible that you could deceive people, even worldwide. I read one article on this where the guy said they actually have specialists who are brought in to determine where's the real one and where's the deep fake, and they weren't able to discern the difference. So what about the rest of us? Being able to discern, is that real? Is that, I know a lot of people have asked me, you know, why did Jesus come in the first century rather than the 21st? You know, it'd be so much better if we had him on video. If it was on video, you wouldn't believe it. But having people give up their lives in the first century for something they saw, oh, that's way more epistemic credibility to somebody who's investigating what they believe than seeing a video. Well, I think this has a certain plausibility that you could deceive people worldwide, and it's just getting weirder and weirder. I don't even need to push this point anymore. You guys are watching everything I'm watching. Anyways, finally, that one world government will be able to possess a universal control of money. Remember, forced all people to receive this mark on the right hand and on the forehead so that they could not buy or sell unless they had that mark. I don't know what this mark is. I'm just going to say that, and I'm probably going to need to repeat it just so people are very clear. They don't walk out of here thinking, oh, so he thinks he's got the mark figured out. I don't. All I'm saying is whatever the mark is, if you don't have it, you are not able to buy or sell anything. Is that plausible? No. Not to a first century writer. Not to a second or third century writer, or a fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh. You could go 19, 20 centuries from the time this was written, and you just go, that doesn't make any sense. How could you have that much authoritarian control that you could actually stop people from buying and selling with coinage? Today, this is very plausible, what we're seeing here, that a dictator or a government could control your ability to use your own money. There's a growing case for this. It's the case for being a cashless society. Many benefits. For one, it's very convenient. You never have to be anywhere and I left my wallet at home, or, oh, I got pickpocketed. You've got a digital wallet. It's in the cloud. You can't get it stolen, and it's just nice. Anywhere you go, you've got your digital wallet. Second, it curtails to a large degree some of the worst crimes going on today in the world. Think about this, okay? The governments would be way, way into this. How do you lie on your taxes if everything is digital? How do you put things under the table? You can't. There is no under the table. Everything is out there in the digital world. So the governments would love this idea. Identity theft. Right now, this past year, $635 billion was lost to identity theft. Now, you know what's cool about this is when it happens, I get my identity stolen. You know what I do? I do what you do. I call up the bank and I say, hey, give me my money back. Somebody stole my money. And they're like, okay. And they give me my money back. They put it right back into my bank account. It takes like 12 hours or 12 minutes. I don't know. But I've never been like, oh, my identity got stolen. That's terrible. What happens? What happens if, you know, they look at this sum, $635 billion, and they're like, you know, we're done paying that back. However, if you get pretty, not that big of a deal, it's invasive, but it's a small surgery, either in your hand or your forehead, and all you got to do is scan all your purchases. If you get your identity stolen then, we'll give the money back. If you won't do something that easy, if you won't come toward us a couple steps, if you won't move toward us in that way, we're not going to help you. So good luck. I mean, what do we see? We see that right now in Florida, the East Coast, the insurance companies are like, we're not going to insure you anymore. We're tired of paying all this money. We're not doing it. No insurance is available, period. If it gets to a point where identity theft is so big, and let me say, it's growing every year, this is not going away, it's getting worse, the logic would just make perfect sense. Why wouldn't you just get a little surgery done so that you wouldn't have to go through getting bankrupted by some criminal? Terrorism. How do you smuggle money if everything is digital? Muggings. You can't get mugged. There's nothing to mug. Bank robberies. How funny would that be? Give me all your money. We don't have any money in here. In fact, there are no banks. You know what I mean? Like, everything's online. Everything's digital. Drug trafficking. Could you imagine that? No cash. No cash. And everything is digital. You could just shut this all down. Human trafficking. My God. Money laundering. I mean, the list goes on. Pick up that book by Harvard economist Kenneth Rogoff. He argues for this case very persuasively. Money's also very filthy. Germs, pathogens, MRSA, E. coli. You know how long it lasts on dollar bills? 4 to 15 years. Read the article, Scientific American, 2017. And in the article, she argues, what if there was like a pandemic? Are we becoming cashless right now? Yes, we are. Think about the old people versus the young people. Old people, are you comfortable without cash? I mean, these are people born in the 50s, 60s, quarter, third. They're like, yeah, we're comfortable with that. What about younger people? Half have no problem walking out the door without any money in their pocket. What about China? E-commerce, anything online with a digital currency, 82% of what is bought is through Alipay or WeChat. You say, well, yeah, that's online. What else are they going to do? What are they going to do? Checks? All right, in person, 2/3 of all purchases are done through Alipay or WeChat Pay. They just use their phone. Walk up, right with their phone, scan it, that's it. They don't use money. I mean, a third of the money is used that way. $7.6 trillion in Canada is spent all digitally. $7.6 trillion. What about Europe? Same thing. Look at this. This is only over a 6-year span. I've got the data up to 2022. 2016, credit was 21%. 2019, 28%. 2022, 41%. Now, I'm not a math major, but that looks like it doubled. It doubled in 6 years. And this graph is just going to keep moving in that direction. We're moving away from cash. Is this plausible? It's happening. It's happening right now. We're watching it happen. All right. But do we have the technology to become a cashless society? Yes. Yes, we do. RFID technology. Look at this here. This little implant goes into the skin, subcutaneous procedure, not a big deal, and in the hand, and this will track people in hospitals, people on vacation. They go out to, you know, their cruise or wherever they want to go. They just have to wave their hand. I mean, they're using this right now. And you can sell these for 3 to 4 cents a piece. The reader to read these things is $2,000. But to produce RFID tech, 3 cents. And it can be mass produced. Walmart uses it. They've been using it for 20 years to restock shelves. I don't know if you ever worked in retail, but there was times every year we had to see how much, you know, stock you actually had. Walmart doesn't have to do that because the RFID tech says restock apples, restock, you know, Bluetooth, restock whatever. Yeah, they even tried it with checking out. Remember in years ago, you would go to like the store and you would go and see like a person. And then when you saw the person, you gave the groceries to the person, remember? But you had to look them in the eye. It was strange, real strange. I know nobody liked it, but you had to talk to them sometimes and they'd make small talk and they would scan your groceries. But you know, now we're like, they convinced us somehow. They're like, why don't you do the work that we were normally doing for you? And we're like, okay, we'll just do the work that you did for us. So now we scan our own groceries. Walmart had the idea of using RFID tech that you would just take the grocery cart up to the scanner. Boop, 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 boop. 6 seconds later, boom, $167.66. That sounds like 666. I got that on my mind. Anyways, it just boom, just went right up, and that was it. And he just walked right out. That was it. They went away from it. They stopped doing it. I don't know why, but you can read that article. And what about other tech? Other tech that, okay, maybe it's not RFID. Is there other tech we could use? Oh, yeah. Check this out. Now, I'm not showing these videos from, you know, some obscure news outlets. These are New York Times, TED Talks. This is from CNN.
Infrared cameras analyze both a user's palm print and the unique pattern of veins under their skin. Within seconds, the user is identified and a payment is made.
We're hoping that palm payments can save people the trouble of carrying physical items like cards and keys so that our lives become more convenient.
Here at Tencent's headquarters in the southern Chinese city of Shenzhen, the technology is used across the building, from the cafeteria to the gym.
Before this, our users needed to enter a password to open the door and use their smartphone to check in and make purchases. Now they can just use their palm.
As for the future of this technology, tech experts say Chinese companies are leading the way.
In terms of the investment we see going into palm payments, it's definitely going to be the future.
That freaked me out. It reads not just your prints, it reads your veins in your hand. Receive some kind of a mark. I don't know what it is. I'm not saying it's RFID. I'm not saying it's the palm reader or whatever. I don't know what it is. All I'm saying is if you don't get this, you can't use your money. Is that plausible? I think this whole picture is totally plausible. And this is not depicting something that is like, you know, something novel or unique in one little, you know, bit of minutia in the modern world. What we're seeing with biblical prophecy is that it's getting the entire geopolitical picture correct. That this is the way the world is going to come to an end. And when it comes to the overarching picture, it's right there. Well, as we wrap up tonight, what we've seen is that a satanically possessed dictator is going to do a number of things. He's going to pressure all people into following him. He's going to control people through financial fear and bullying. He's going to deceive people from trusting in God, mimic Christianity to draw people away from Jesus. Does this all sound plausible to you? Let me go a little bit further. Does this sound familiar to you? To me, when I look at this, I look at it and say, I see this happening right now. What I don't mean to imply is that we're you know, living in the tribulation. No, what I'm implying is exactly what this same author wrote in one of his letters. 1 John 2:8, John wrote, "You have heard that Antichrist is coming. Already, many Antichrists have appeared." So we know that the Antichrist is coming in the future, but he's saying, actually, there's going to be all these little Antichrists. As history reaches its zenith, its climax, you're going to see that all of these things are fitting together. And he says, from this, we know that the last hour has come. When you start to see these signs are building and building and building and building, you know that the Antichrist is on the scene. Years ago, there was this Christian guy. He was a fundamentalist. His idea of following God was reading a bunch of books in his room, fooling around with his girlfriend, smoking weed, you know, and then coming out to our Bible study to have theological debates, right? I didn't really get along with him that much, I'm going to be honest. Didn't really sense a lot of love in his life. Seemed like he was kind of a hypocrite. But we would get into these theological debates, and he always liked to argue about the end times. So he said, you know, you think that there's going to be a pre-trib rapture? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, why? I'm like, well, these 9 reasons. And, you know, he would give his arguments where, no, we're going to live through the tribulation. We're going to have to face the Antichrist. And I remember one time we were on this, you know, getaway retreat. And we're sitting there, here we go again with this guy. And he's, you know, he's like, you know, just blustering about, I'm going to live through the end times. And, you know, I'm going to face the Antichrist. And, you know, if I have to die for my faith, I will. And if I got to starve, I will. And if I got to lead my family through this, I will. And I'm just listening to this guy just bluster, you know. And this young woman sitting next to him turned over to him and she said, so-and-so, what makes you think that you're going to live for Christ in the end times when you're not living for him right now? Good question. When you look at all this, I hope you don't just think, yeah, well, she really put him on blast. She did, by the way. It was great. I hope that kind of puts us on blast a little bit. Yeah, pressure from people, feeling the pressure of the culture, the world, being deceived by Satan, walking away from God. Many people in this room, you're not going to be here in a year. You're going to be deceived. It's not going to take some worldwide deceiving Antichrist figure. It's just going to take deceit from Satan. I hope you want to walk with Christ today. I hope it's not just a fad for you. I hope it's not just something in the future that you want to get into. Hopefully then I'll be able to handle it. No, see if you can handle it right now. Jesus said in Matthew 6, "Do not worry about tomorrow. Today has enough worries of its own." Well, I'll leave you with that to think about.